at the end of the day, if you if you've got the right attitude and the right morals and the right values, and you work your butt off and you're good to people around you, which I always have been, you'll shine. You know, you'll get through it.
Whether it's the clothes you wear to work or a metaphor for putting up a front, we all wear a uniform. But often there's a lot going on behind the uniform, and many of us are reluctant to express how we are really feeling.
Each week on Behind the Uniform, Dr. Izzy Smith and Captain Hugo Tovey will be joined by a special guest as they talk openly and honestly about their experiences with mental health. Nothing will be off limits, so prepare yourself for tears, laughter and goosebumps.
Hello and welcome everyone to Behind the Uniform podcast. This is officially our first guest. First episode and our first guest. We're pretty stoked to get underway. And as always, I've got Izzy by my side as the wonderful co-host. Welcome, Izzy.
Good morning.
It's pretty awesome that we've finally got this amazing guest in the room with us. And, his name is Brayton Astor and he's an NRL legend. He's played over 300 games, including State of Origin and representing his country for Australia and Greece. Also won a premiership. And also what I find quite amazing is one of the youngest captains to play the game at just 20 years of age for the Bulldogs, which at such a young age and the pressures that come from that, and the work you're doing, or Brayton's doing now. You know, he's a Fox League commentator, avid golfer, devoted father of three, and sports manager, mentoring the young up and coming kids and the young athletes, mental health advocate, which is why today's episode is really relevant. But also, most importantly, from the short time I've known you, Brace, you seem like an all-round top bloke. So it's great to have you on the podcast, Brace. Welcome.
It's great to be. Really looking forward to it, actually. It's something that's pretty close to my heart. So it's good to share my experiences, but also just chew the fat, I suppose.
We're going to kick off with, rather than talking about your footy career, and this is about, learning what's going on behind your uniform and what else there is about you, I want you to tell us and maybe our listeners something that they wouldn't know about you, something interesting, non-footy related.
Wow. Got me straight away.
Put him on the spot already, is. I like it.
It's not much that people don't know about me, unfortunately. I don't know. I think...
You into rom-coms or...?
No, not... Actually, I don't mind rom-coms. I'm a bit of a crier too. There you go. I'm a bit of an emotional guy.
I think that counts as
fine. If I think of something, I'll say it throughout the podcast, but you've caught me off guard. No. I'm a bit of a sports nut, so there's not much I don't love about sports. I'm trying to think of something, some curveball.
Do you have any recipe specialties that you whip up?
That's a good question. Here we go, I love a baked dinner. I'm really good at cooking a bake. That's one of my specialties.
Surely, your mum taught you some good Greek recipes.
Yeah, I love Greek food. Spanakopita, dolmades, moussaka.
We hear this accent come out now.
It's the best. You can't beat the Greek food. It's actually funny you mentioned in the intro that I played for Greece. That was a good time. I captain coached Greece. I had to go over there for 6 weeks, so that was a bit of a tough job for me to go over there. It was one of the best ever, but that was a good experience. But Greek food's definitely my favourite, yeah.
Oh, good. And something that all three of us have in common is that we've done a little bit for Movember.
Mm.
Can you tell us how you got involved in Movember?
Well, I think for me, I've been involved with a few charities around depression and suicide, anxiety, that sort of thing, because I've been directly impacted by it. When I got contacted by Movember, of course, I'm more than happy to help. I just try to bring as much awareness to all those charities. I think they do an amazing job, and it's just close to my heart. So, it's a bit of a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, no, and that's something we'll obviously be talking about, Brayton. And you have had an amazing NRL career, and you are an avid sportsman. We'll talk about some of that. But I suppose on that Movember theme and the sort of your understanding and your experiences with mental health, sort of growing up, what was your growing up for you like? Yeah. Obviously, your uncle was an avid Rabbitohs player, and so you've always sort of had, footy, living and breathing footy, but sort of growing up and then sort of what you had to go through with your dad. Do you just want to kind of give a bit of a background there?
Yeah, so I had I grew up in a sports family. My uncle was the president of South, so, he played for Australia. He was one of the best players to play rugby league. He's a hooker and, so for me it was, I was ingrained into a family that was pretty exposed, I suppose. A lot of people knew who we were and, I had a great upbringing. Both my mum and my dad met when they were just at school. JJ Cole, they pretty much fell in love straight away and married each other at a young age and happily ever after. So you know, I love my sport, always played my sport. My parents gave me everything, every opportunity to play golf. I grew up in a beautiful house on the golf course. Played golf every day at the backyard. Played it at quite a high level, and I played rugby league, and I kind of just, I was given everything. I had every opportunity. I was, you know, this, I couldn't have had a better upbringing, to be fair. And then got to 15 years of age, and that kind of just hit a brick wall. My father committed suicide from nowhere, pretty much, at the time. He'd had a sort of a friendship go wrong. He helped out a friend, and the friend kind of took advantage of him and pretty much stole money off him, which was, he just didn't know how to accept that. As a family at the time, as I said, we had everything. You know, my dad had provided us with a good life, good lifestyle, good upbringing. He was a great dad, madly in love with my mum, who still hasn't been with anyone since, you know. She's still coping with it herself, even now, so long afterwards.
How old was your dad then, sorry, Brad?
He was 40. I think he was 40 or 41.
So similar age to you now.
Mate, I'm 38, yeah. So it's crazy now that I think that he actually even thought about doing it. Now, I understand more now, but when you get to my age, you know, that I am now entering that time when he had kids like I do and took his own life, it is crazy, and I often think about it now, to be fair. But there was a real shock to us. I mean, suicide's a shock to anyone when it happens to you or your family, your friends. And back then it wasn't as, didn't happen as often. Mm. It wasn't kind of an epidemic these days. Back then it happened a lot, but not, I don't think it happened as much, and people didn't really talk about it as much either. We certainly hadn't been exposed to it at all. So it was like a nightmare, really, you know, to have everything. I think because I thought everything was so good, and I didn't know, because I was only 15, I probably didn't know what was going on in my dad's life. And, although I knew that he wasn't himself, because he was going through a lot with his, with the business and with his mate who had, he was going to court and all that. So I knew there was drama, but I didn't think it was ever going to end like that.
I don't think it's something anyone ever expects.
No, it's a shock to the system.
And you're right, the landscape of discussions around mental health is changing, you know. I've been doing Movember for 10 years.
Yeah.
And even since then, you know, it's normal to tell people you're seeing a psychologist. Yep. It's normal to say you're struggling.
Yeah.
10 years ago, and this was about 20 years ago, things were so different.
It was very different. And there was, it was hard because he didn't leave a note either. So you're trying to, you don't know. So there was no answers at the time. And then rumours too, because a lot of people knew the family, and because my uncle and my mum, then people start, you know, making up stories, and, you know, and that's hard to handle as well, because we don't know, you know, when someone takes their life and doesn't leave any note, you don't know why.
It's interesting you say that, Braith. It's almost the closure part in a way. And yeah, my best mate killed himself, during my army training, and he was only 22. Wow. But you know, he was going through some serious battles, but he left a note, and in that very detailed note, there was a bit of that closure, and as angry that a lot of us felt at the time, you had a bit of that understanding in a way of why he did what he did. But being 15 and being so young, like obviously you're kind of not even mentally developed then in a way, and it must have been to comprehend that. Like, were you angry at the start? Or like to understand why he decided to do it?
I was pretty angry, and I kind of just turned my, like, I mean, as much of a nightmare as it was, and it was just sickening at the time. Like, you know, it haunts you forever. It just that's just the way it is. But you just, at the time, it was like, for me, I was such a disciplined, like, even at that age, and I was so sort of disciplined, and I had goals and aspirations, and I wanted to be a professional golfer at that time. And I was playing in a tournament two or three days later. I just went and played. Like, I just moved on with my life.
Wow.
My brother didn't. He really struggled with it at the time and still does, and mum the same. But the way I dealt with it was different. I was like, just keep rolling, you know, like it's just keep rolling. But, you know, and we'll probably talk about it, but it comes back to bite you. You know, you got to deal with it. You got to deal with the grief.
And I think everyone does deal with grief in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's something important for people to, you know, who are going through hard times or have lost someone.
Yeah.
There isn't really a right or wrong way. And everyone has different coping mechanisms. And I think you're right. If you do push it to the side, it will come back to bite you.
Yeah.
However, for some people, that might just be what they need to do to get through that short-term period.
Well, you can't control it. Grief is grief. Mm. Like you said, like the way I respond or handled it was totally different to my brother and my mum, but that there's no wrong way. There's no right way. I think the only thing I would say is that if you totally push it to the side, it's going to come back at some stage because it's not something that you can push to the side, to be fair. But, you know, at the same time, like, it's the way I handled it, and, you know, I think I've come through the other side okay, to be fair, you know. So it's, even though it'll never go away. We all know that. Like, it's something that sticks with you forever. You just got to find ways of dealing with it and making sure that you're okay and that you fix yourself, because it does a lot of damage, you know.
It's interesting you say, Brett, that you fix yourself. And, you know, you said your release was sport even from that young age, and it's something that never goes away. But over the years, especially then, to say where you are now, and do you still seek that professional support, or have, like, early days, do you find that talking to your mates was a really good way to get through those things?
Yeah, definitely talking to your mates. But, again, when your mates are 15 at the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what are they going to say? Well,
my captain of my Mobart Movember team, his dad died from suicide. Mm. And he said, he tells this wonderful story of one of the people in his footy team after his dad died came with a dish of spaghetti bolognese, had no idea what to say, and just kind of awkwardly, like, shoved it in Tommy's face and was like, we thought you might be hungry.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But even though he didn't know what to say, because, like, who does know what to say? I'm a doctor and I deal with death all the time, and I still get really uncomfortable with these situations. But even that... act of
actions,
it meant so much to him.
Now, and that's one of it's funny you say that, because that's what you remember, that, like, when you're going through that grief, you remember, you know, people coming with dinners and lunches, and, you know, I had a couple of mates who stayed with me 24/7, and you never forget that for the rest of your life, because it's a really tough time to get through. But that's right, like, you don't need to say anything, you know, as long as people feel your support and you're physically there, and, like, even if you just, you know, it could be a phone call, could be a message, as long as you feel like you're loved and people have got your back, that's really important through a time like that.
100%. And I think sometimes we worry when we're supporting people that we don't know what to say, and that might mean that we don't call someone. However, it's that, that act of just showing you care means so much, and you might feel a little bit awkward. However, that awkwardness, you know, goes away in 10 seconds and be remembered forever.
Oh, definitely.
And I suppose, Braith, you know, leading from, I guess, 15, like you said, you went straight into your sport. You were obviously an amazing golfer as well as a very talented rugby player. Having that father figure at that crucial age in your life, and then, you know, someone that you can talk to about your sport and sort of have that sounding board, and then to lose that at such a very vulnerable age as well, when you're about to go through, you know, your later teenage years, and you're...
Even now, mate.
Yeah.
You know, it's that, again, very important. Like, you kind of, you know, your life's never going to be the same for a million reasons. But you do, you lose that that mentor and that support and that sounding board, and I still today miss it, you know. But that's a big thing. You got to find someone who is a mentor, someone that you look up to, someone that you do need someone there. Like, you can't do it yourself, you know. I think I kind of did for a long time, and it hit me hard in my probably mid-20s when I was under a lot of pressure playing first grade and things weren't going so well, and, you know, I kind of come back and just snuck up on me and realised that I probably would have made a lot of different decisions if my dad was here. And, you know, whether it's just, you got to deal with it somehow, you know.
Did you find that you had to almost be that man of the house in a way?
Yeah.
Like, because your mum's obviously, you know, you couldn't speak any more highly of your mum. Seems like she's... what she's gone through, but then to kind of, did you feel like you had to step up?
Definitely,
then?
Yeah, I still do now, you know. I did at the time, and I still protect my mum and look after her, and even now, you know, mum's been a little, she just had a bad back the last week or two, and make sure I'm dropping over meals and doing, like, that's just the responsibility I've taken, and I love it. Like, it's, even what I do now, I've always loved being a leader. Even before my dad died, I was, you know, captain of my under 11, 12, 13, 14, 15s.
Are you the older sibling?
No, younger. Oh. But my other brother's a couple, 3 years older. But still, I took over that role. It's just something I've always been comfortable with. But yeah, I took it all upon myself and still do to a degree. And I do thrive off it. Like, I love it. But it's, you know, and going back to what you said in terms of mentors, mentors are very important. I think you got to find people in your life who you respect, which you do come across. And if you see that person as someone that can help you with personal issues or maybe financial issues or whatever it may be, it's great to have those people. If you don't have it, like, even if you've got a mum or dad and they don't offer you that, which is happens quite a lot, if you can find that one person who inspires you and will help you make the right decisions, it's very important.
Who were your mentors?
Well, I didn't have any, you know. So, and then I come across a couple. I had Jason Black, who's he's a real estate agent, but just the guy who was like a father figure who I could bounce ideas off at a period of my life. I've had a few, and then I had a guy called Joe Sponholz, who's a really successful businessman over in America, and he just found his way over here, and he was a Rooster supporter. We played golf, and then just a sounding board as well. You know, I've had Nick Politis, the boss of the Roosters, and still is, and still talk to him, who's someone I talk to a lot, and, you know, he's more a businessman, as you know, in that, but he helps me if I need it. You know, you kind of doing what I do, you come across a lot of guys who are successful, and I'm a pretty good judge of character, ones that you can trust and rely on. You know, there's been quite a few over the years, but I've always found there's a long time there where I had no one, you know, and I think I come to a time in my life where I thought I need it, you know, and it was more in my mid to late 20s. Yeah.
Now, talking of your mid to late 20s, this might be a good chance to talk about your rugby career because you were a captain when you were 18. I joked before that, like, when I was 18, I was, you know, partying, definitely not thinking much more than a 1 metre bubble of myself. So I'd love to hear about, you know, the pressures that you were under as a rugby player, under, you know, the public eye, the media, and how that was for you when you were young.
I don't know. It was kind of like a roller coaster that I jumped on and just couldn't get off, you know. I went from school at 17 to first grade at 18, and I couldn't, like, it was so surreal, and then it just kept going. Like, just then the first year I played was crazy, and it was all over the news. First game I played was on the back page of the paper, and, you know, I got Rookie of the Year, and, you know, all that, like I said, just everything just went crazy. So I was on there. I couldn't get off, and then your life changes forever. You know, you're exposed to everything. People just can say whatever they like about you. And, you know, it's actually tough. Like, you at the time I loved it, but then when you get to an age where you can't be good forever, you're going to have times where you go through a bit of a trough, or you know, you go through a tough time.
I think something really valuable I've learned is that it's normal to have downs. It's normal to have shit times.
Yeah.
I think, you know, especially now with social media, we feel like we've got this pressure to be really good, really efficient, really happy all the time, and it's just not realistic.
No, it's okay to be not okay, you know. That's reality. Like, it is, and it's a good probably time to talk about a lot of the athletes these days. You know, they're getting good money, they're getting paid good dollars and all that, and they've got probably a lifestyle that a lot of people are envious and want to be, but it's not all what it's cracked up to be. Social media is such a great platform, but it can be so horrible, and it is in a lot of ways.
It's interesting you say that, Braith. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, because when you started out as the 18-year-old kid and your social media really didn't exist then, you know, to the way it does now. And so I suppose your advice to those sort of young kids would be very interesting, because you didn't really have that. And I think being an 18-year-old kid going through the rugby ranks now... And we spoke about this previously over a coffee, is that the expectations are huge. And, you know, for being so young, and then to have potentially your face plastered over a newspaper, a news article that, you know, you're in some bad form, or you shouldn't be playing, or you shouldn't be this. And I think people often forget there's a difference between, I was saying it easy, a difference between being on the couch and supporting your team and kind of say, oh, you missed that bloody try, you missed the goal, and that's fine. But the people that actually get out of their way to...
Oh, people are ruthless.
don't understand
people
it.
People are disgusting. Eh? It's like people don't see it, because I think... I thank God there was no social media when I played, because I copped enough, to be fair, without having the extra added social... Yeah, with my, I'm an agent now, so I look after some league players, but majority golfers, and I don't encourage social media too much. I think it's a great platform to earn some money and advertise and marketing and kind of get your image out there, and to a degree, in terms of professional, and a lot of people these days look at that. If you know, if you go on to sign a deal with Lexus or whatever it may be, they look at your followers and how many. But so that's all part of business. Yeah. But I think don't give away too much. You know, I think people having too much access to you isn't good. But just with the, you know, I think a lot of Australia judge people by what they earn, and they think that if you earn big money, you're happy. And if you earn big money, then they're entitled to have opinion about you. If you're a sportsman, they're entitled to say whatever the hell they like about you, which is just bullshit, you know. Yeah. Some of the, you know, I mean, a lot of the guys that play professional sport, not just league, they come from small towns, country towns, or maybe just come from Queensland, New South Wales, or Perth, Western Australia, whatever it may be, Tassie. But they have to move away from their homes. They've got to support themselves, and I don't think money really is that big of an issue. They've probably come from nothing, you know. So it's not like they go, it's about being reaching their goals and being professional athletes and reaching their dreams as a player, not the money.
Well, it's funny you say that, and that's the theme or the purpose behind this podcast, being behind the uniform, is that often that, you know, being an athlete wearing that uniform or even just that metaphor for putting up that front, people often see that mask in a while, that uniform as being that person. But if you take that off, you're all just human beings. You're all real people, and you've all got feelings.
People, it's like you're a character in a movie when you're a sports star. And, you know, I meet people now, and they've already prejudged you before they meet you, right? And that's okay, but that's just because of the way that you are portrayed in the media, you know. So I mean, I meet people now and they go, "Oh, you're a good bloke. I thought you were a dickhead." That's a backhanded compliment. I'll take that.
They probably thought, you know, that if they were bloody, you know, Queensland supporters in the Origin days and you tore them apart or something, they're probably like, "Oh, that Brayton Astor's a dickhead." You know?
Yeah, I get that because you get so passionate about sport, and you know, even I'll be watching a game and I'm like, "Oh, you're a dickhead. Why'd you do that for?" Yeah, yeah. You know, you just kind of, that's just part of, you know, your upbringing and what you do. But I think more people need to actually peel it back and take a good, you know, deep breath and think about the individual and think about what they've been through, think about their life, think about, put yourself in their shoes and how you would respond to people saying, "I wish you were dead."
Well, it's interesting, Braith, on that point. I was just going to raise this one point. I don't know if you know a guy called Taylor Walker. He's an AFL player, plays captain of, or was the captain of, my Adelaide Crows team. Anyway, he's just gone through a bit of a rough patch with form. The whole club has. It's a difficult time. Everyone understands that, especially being an athlete. But he recently put a post up when he had an interview on Triple M saying, "It's getting to a stage where it's pretty disgusting. Death threats, family threats, comments about kids. Sometimes you read it and think, who on God's earth could sit there and say something like this? Once you read it, you can't unread it." And you see someone like that posting that, and you think that, you know, he's being severely impacted from that.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd hate to think how often that happens. And, you know, if you're mentally robust enough to deal with that, but if you're a young kid and you're hearing that type of stuff, it's not going to affect your bloody mental health too well.
It's shocking, you know. And that's the reality. Like, that's actually what happens to a lot of players, a lot. Like, not just a few, a lot. It's sad. It really is. I think we've got and I've said it a few times, I think Australia's really got a problem with tall poppy syndrome. You know, over in the States, if you're a professional athlete, you are applauded. You're a hero. You're an idol, and they don't care. You know, they respect you, and they love you for your achievements. You know,
something America does really well is they celebrate success.
Yes,
like I said, I was there last year for the New York Marathon, and the next day, I was like, "Why is everyone still wearing their medal?" And people walk up to you and want to high five you, and you get free coffees on the street. And I thought about, you know, if we did that in Australia, if I went to work with my medal, God, Isabel, think you're pretty good because you came 2,000th in the City to Surf.
I don't think we. I mean, again, I see this because I'm entrenched in it, but I don't think the average Aussie would think that or see that. You did because you've been to the States and you experienced it. And even over the EPL, these guys are on $100,000 a week. You know, like, you just say an athlete. When I was playing, an athlete earns $200,000 or $300,000 a year. and everyone thinks they're loaded, they're set up for life. You know, half of that, you get taxed half of that. If you move away from home, you're supporting your mum and dad back home because they've got no money. By the end of the year, you ain't got a cent.
And your body is often ruined.
And your body's gone when you retire.
I was a doctor for a footy team. Yeah. And, you know, as a doctor, my ethical values are, you know, do no harm, always do good for patients. And sometimes it actually really challenged my values because I was worried about what we were setting up these young guys for the rest of their life. Yeah. You know, they can't keep working as a carpenter if their back's, you know, fucked from playing footy and then being pushed to keep playing. Yeah. And so
that's,
I think,
a sacrifice you make. And
it's an interesting point, though, the money thing. I think a lot of people listening to this.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, especially during COVID, and it can be financially stressful times. And I my heart goes out to those small business owners.
So
those,
do I.
Those people who are actually really doing it tough. And there are people doing it really tough. And my heart does go out for those people. But I think at the same time, some people, there's a difference between being, you know, comfortable and being able to pay bills. But I think some people think that if you're getting that $1 million paycheck coming in, that it's just going to make your life so grand and you're going to be so happy all the time. But that's obviously not.
I think you make a good point there, because I've noticed throughout COVID, just with our work in at Fox, we do podcasts and we get, again, social media interactions. There is a lot of negativity around at the moment, and it is hard because I think for people who are sitting at home who've lost their job and aren't getting paid and don't have any money and are doing it real tough, it's a real negative time.
Mm.
And you see guys like, you know, rugby league players, AFL players earning big money and maybe making stupid decisions too, or not appreciating the position they're in. And you kind of judge, you kind of put it all in the same basket, and a few guys doing the wrong thing can kind of label the whole code. I think that's a tough thing, you know, because there are guys in our game who do stuff up, make the wrong decisions, and probably don't deserve it, to be fair. But they're few and far between, and I think you got to separate that. But it is a tough time. It's a tough time for everyone, and it's a good time to talk about this sort of stuff at the moment.
On that point with the mental health topic, and it's part of the educational component of this podcast, and you know, what you've learnt through your own lived experience from, you know, the tragic loss of your father and then going through your highs and lows of your NRL career. And then I was reading that, you know, you got to about 23, 24 in your early 20s. And, you know, most people on the outside would look at that being, they'd swap places in a heartbeat, but you actually considered quitting the game because, you know, your mental health wasn't at the, you know.
I got, in my first year, I got Rookie of the Year and I got voted the most overrated player by my peers. So the Rugby League Week had a magazine and they do a player poll, which I thought was pretty bad, you know. I think they wouldn't probably do it these days for this very reason, because I think now we've evolved and come a long way, and we know that we've got to probably protect our stars or just human beings.
Doesn't matter if you're a star.
That's what I'm
or
saying. You know,
person.
Like when so they do a player poll and they'd ask a lot of questions, and their last question was, "Who's the most overrated player?" And a lot of players wouldn't answer it.
Because, and sorry, this is your peers voting on this.
Your peers. Yeah. Well, but you're talking opposition too. It's a loaded question. But so that a lot of people wouldn't answer it, but obviously some did. At the time, I was burst onto the scene, Rookie of the Year. And, you know, to a degree, I would admit that I was overrated because people were putting me up here before I'd probably earned my stripes, but that's not out of my control. But I got voted overrated. And then it kind of just stuck for a few years in a row, because I think it was in the end, I got it a couple of years in a row. And I was playing Origin and winning Dally M 5/8 of the year and winning Roosters Player of the Year and still getting it. I just think it became a bit of an easy one, because even I remember the journalist, when he rang me to do it, answer the questions, he said, "Braith, you know, answer all these questions." And then he said, "Who's the most overrated player?" And I said, "Mate, I don't want to answer that. It's not something I'm really comfortable with. I don't think we need to do." And he goes, "Well, everyone else is saying this bloke. Why don't you like say?" He, the journalist, was actually throwing me into someone. So I can imagine that probably happened with me. Yeah. But anyway, whether I was right or wrong, it really affected me, because I got to a stage where I'd kind of felt like I'd earned the right not to get it. And I'd worked my butt off and got all awards and won premierships and played. Like, I couldn't do any more. And I remember sitting upstairs thinking, I'm not going to get it this year. Like, I can't possibly get it, surely. And I remember just, I was on the computer and the Channel 9 News came up. I think it was maybe Brian Henderson back then, but the headline was, you know, after the break, we're going to, you know, reveal the most overrated player, which it's just disgusting in itself when you think about it, right? And I could know Mum was watching it downstairs, and I knew she'd be hoping it's not me too, because she knows, you know, it would impact me. And I heard it from upstairs. I was like, fuck off. You know, I said, that's it, I'm done. I remember breaking down, just going, nah, that's it.
Just as you like breaking down in tears.
Yeah, just like, nah, that's it for me.
And how old were you?
Probably 24, yeah.
Because it feels like, and I've had this before, when you are feeling like you're doing your absolute best, trying your absolute hardest and giving your most, and it's just not enough. Mm. And that's a really horrible feeling, because you're like, I can't do any more.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for people that are in that situation, whether it's sport, business, your relationship?
For me, it was, I mean, I had to just step away from a bit and have a break. Mm. And really just, again, you have to peel it all back and think, be grateful for still the position you're in, you know. It's unfair. Yes, I can't do anymore. Yes, I'm working my ass off. But it could be worse, you know. And I know that's probably not the best way to look at it, but, you know, like, I'm getting paid good. Again, I know money comes in, but, like, you're getting paid. You got job security, getting paid good money. You're playing the game that you love. But I started not loving, you know. Like, it was more a...
Well, it sounds like it was impacting your mental health.
Oh, so. Yeah. Like, I was
You know, mental health and self-worth, hard to love something if it's making you feel shit
about
yourself.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter what profession you are. I think, you know, imagine if there was, you know, my work in the army, or if you're a doctor, or if you're a school teacher, and there's this poll going around annually, and it's just, you know, who's the most overrated teacher, or who's the most overrated doctor, and you get the results out, and it's like, you know, Dr. Izzy Smith, you're the most overrated doctor.
All your other colleagues think you're crap.
Yeah, like,
I know. But like, that's what I mean.
But like, I can see how that would affect you. Like, we're all human. If I saw that, I'd be like, oh, I thought I've done well this year. Yeah. Like, I'm all for constructive feedback, but being told that, you know...
Because what I did too, and again, you go back to, it's not like... And even if you guys got voted, it would be, stay within your association or hospital or whatever it may be. With us, it's just common knowledge to the whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you're running onto a field and the opposition fans are screaming it out to you every time you touch a ball or run onto the field. So it doesn't go away. It's still there now. I still get it now. Like, that's something I'm labelled with for life because of this shit magazine who just wanted to make a name for themselves but degrading good people, you know? Like,
I take it you haven't really done much with that magazine since.
I banned them pretty much straight away, and to be they didn't last long. They've gone, which doesn't surprise me.
It's probably a good thing, huh?
Yeah.
And I guess I'm trying to draw some, you know, conclusions to how this could be related to, you know, people at the moment. And I think there's a lot of people with COVID who probably are trying to do their absolute best in their job, and regardless of how hard they work, it's not enough.
Mm.
And, you know, something that, you know, at times I've had really tough times where I've felt I'm a terrible doctor, I'm not cut out for this. And it's been really important for me to say, Izzy, you're more than just a doctor. Have you ever thought, you know, I'm more than just a rugby player?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't let things affect me the way it used to. I got to a stage where I was like, I don't give a shit what anyone else thinks, you know. That was a bit of a moment for me. I did see a sports psych at the time. My mum encouraged that, and that was really good for me.
She sounds like a smart woman.
Yeah. So I'd see a sports psych, and I'd bandage both my hands up, my wrists, which I didn't need to, but I'd write all positives on both of my wrists. Just a bit of the game plan, not much, but more like positive sign before every game. So if I was ever doubting myself on the field, I'd just look at my wrist.
Do you mind me asking, what were some of these positive affirmations?
I think...
you got this, Bray?
Yeah, pretty much, you know. Like, I mean, some of them would just be back yourself, take them on, you know, just got to keep, make your own luck, kind of just all positive.
That's great.
And you know, your back yourself was always a big one. Take him on was always a big one, because I was, you know, that's something my dad used to always say too, so that ran well with me. But it was something that I found, and that really, I found some inner peace with that sort of stuff on the field and blocked everything out. And then I kind of went through a tough period, but found myself again and started playing, you know, captain the Roosters, got to a grand final, you know, got back into Origin, all that sort of stuff, when I thought it could have all been over. But it also taught me a lesson that doesn't really matter what the fuck anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
Like, and it, you know, it matters what the people closest to you think. And I knew that I was a good person. I knew I had great values, great morals, and I'd come through it because with hard work and at the end of the day, if you've got the right attitude and the right morals and the right values and you work your butt off and you're good to people around you, which I always have been, you'll shine. You know, you'll get through it.
Sounds like maybe a lesson you learnt was that, you know, you can't make everyone happy. You can't please everyone.
Possible.
And if you keep striving for that, you'll always be disappointed.
Definitely. You're spot on. That's impossible. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, you know.
I think especially as you get older, that's something that you realise.
Yes.
And you often have to go through a few ups and downs to get there.
It's an interesting one that I personally struggle with, and I think a lot of people do struggle with, is that, you know, you always kind of, you know, want to impress people. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's important to have that, you know, that goal, those goals and those values. But to what point, you know? And I think that's something that, you know, especially people growing up, you know, they think they always have to be someone better and be someone bigger and, you know, constantly trying to, you know, climb that ladder in a way. And I think, it can be very detrimental. Yeah.
I think if you're listening to this and you're either that person or you're the parents as well. Like, I think if you're a parent, you've got to understand the pressure you put on kids as well, or maybe the expectations too high, or, you know, I think we all got to check ourselves at times, not only ourselves, but how we treat others, and are we putting too much pressure, expectations, and are we having an impact, a negative impact on our kids? You know, that I think because I've been through that as an individual, and I haven't had my dad there, even though I've had great support from my mum, you know, I think that that'll help me with my fatherhood and the way I treat my kids and make sure that, you know, they just, you know, the lessons I've learnt, I will instill in them, you know.
I love that though, and you touched on that, you know, you're now, you know, proud father of three kids, and when you went through that at such a young age with your dad and you didn't have that father figure in those vulnerable years, it had, and then what you've learnt now through your football career, has that changed, you know, the dad you are today? And
yeah, for sure. I, you know, like, again, it's taken positives out of a diabolical situation, but, you know, I could never, ever leave my kids, you know, like, and only because I've experienced it, I suppose.
Mm.
You know, it's just something I could never, never do because I know what it feels like. So, you know, that's something that, you know, drives me to be the best dad that I can be. And but my dad was a great dad, you know, honestly amazing and very similar to me. But you know, he got depressed and it was a real curveball for the family. But I think as I said, it's something that has made me the man I am today. So pretty lucky.
And maybe just touching a little bit about, you know, losing your dad again. I think for people who go through the tragic loss of losing someone to suicide, it's so hard to know what they... You just said you'd never do that to your kids.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, you know, the feelings you had about towards your dad. And, you know, Hugo actually kind of talked to me about it a while ago. About, we just don't know what people are going through. And to be that low, to feel like that's your best option. Do you have any advice for people if they are feeling that low?
Yeah, I get it, actually. Even now I'll get, like, young kids contact me on social media. Not often, but that does happen, that are really going through tough times. And I'm not a doctor, you know, but I've kind of... And I don't try to be either. I think my advice is always to try and get some help and talk about it. But also to just... you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Like, no matter where you are, how dark you are, like, we've all been in the darkest of dark places. There is a light, you know, and you'll get through it. And I mean, the obvious ones are you got to talk about it. You know, you've got to communicate, whether that be with a professional or with, you know, people that are close to you. But, you know, like, when you're in that moment, you just think you're never going to get out.
That's the problem, isn't it?
You know, from my experiences myself and through friends who have been through similar things, it's you know, as hard as it is, you get through it. You got to be as positive as you can, and life goes on. It really does. Like, some people we all think it's not going to, but it does.
And I think it's important there as well to consider, and if you're listening to this and you might have a loved one or someone close to you that you know is really struggling, is that, you know, just to be there for them and to almost hold their hand through those dark, shitty time to just let them know that although they can't see that light, you can see the light. So just guide them towards it and then just be there for them as much as you can. It's so important.
And you can't be expected to solve their problems. Mm. You can't always find a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can't expedite a problem. You know, you want to help someone feel better the next day, but that's just not going to happen. And so, like you said, holding someone's hand through that dark journey.
And you know what else too? Mm. Like, don't be embarrassed about it. Like, you know, I think it's, there's so many people in the same situation, in the same scenario. That's another thing. Like, you kind of feel like it's just you. But you maybe find people that are in similar situations that you can bounce off. And, you know, I know it's not easy, and it's probably not easy to find, but there's a lot of people going through similar things. And you're not alone. That's the big thing. You know, I think that's what happens when you get into that position. You kind of, you think you're alone and there's just no way out, you know, when
and
there
I think
is.
That's as well because we don't feel comfortable expressing how we're really feeling. You know, people ask us how we're going and we say we're fine.
Mm.
You know, I'm a long distance runner, and I joke that, you know, runners think it's a secret that they manage their mental health through running.
Mm.
Like, all of us are usually kind of crazy and just using running to look after our well-being.
Yeah,
and you go on a, like, 2-3 hour run with a stranger and then you end up talking about all the crap going on in your life and it makes you realise that, you know, someone who looks like they've got it all together, everyone's, you know, everyone has hardships, everyone has their own traumas and, you know, life is a series of ups and downs and we just all need to, you know, develop skills and a support network to help us get through those downs.
And you're right, like, try and find a release too. Yours is running, you know, but it's good to have a release and have somewhere where you can just get away from the world. And that sounds a bit negative, but you know, the stresses and the, you know, the work and the decision-making and all that just goes somewhere where you don't need to think or do anything that's, you know, kind of too much. You just go and have a good time.
And you touched, Brace, on the work you're doing now, being the sort of the player agent. You've got your own business now, sort of mentoring those young kids, but it's not just simply signing them up and trying to make the quick buck for you. It's with what you've been through, you're more of that mentor and you're more interested in, say, their mental well-being. And there was a young player by the name of Ziggy Vincent, if I've got that name right. And you know, you obviously shared your views on that, who sadly ended his own life. Just a young kid, young up-and-coming athlete, the whole world and life ahead of him.
Shocking.
You know, and you know, that obviously cut deep to you.
Yeah.
And then now you're mentoring these young kids. Do you find that's a
that's a huge
big
part.
Motivation for you to?
Well, it's probably the motivation. You know, I'm not motivated by, I know we'll say it again, but the money. I've always wanted to, because I captained the Bulldogs at 20, but I captained the Roosters and then I captained even the Tigers when I was there at the end. So I've captained all the clubs I was at because I got a really good rapport with the guys I've always worked with. I got great relationships, and I still do, with all the guys that I work with, and I help feel like I had really good relationships with them and advice. And because I work full-time at Fox League, I can't coach, which I do have a deep sort of burning desire to do, but I just don't think I ever will. So
you've got a son, maybe under 11 in a few years.
Maybe. That might be it, I think. Yeah, so I thought I could, the next best thing would be to mentor these guys. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big part of that is mental health. A lot of people don't look at that enough. So they just, a lot of agents just sign the kids up. You know, they'll sign them up at 14 and 15, which I think is disgusting.
They just had the dollar signs in their eyes. And
yeah, a lot of them sign them at 13, 14, 15 and sign them on 5 or 6 year contracts. They just get as many as they can. They roll the dice and they hope that a few of them make it. But that's not what I'm about. So ours is, I won't go into much detail, but I started with the golf. I've got my league accreditation now. But my focus is to have a core group as a team kind of thing.
Mm.
We all bounce off each other. We're all there for each other. Dinners, that sort of thing, WhatsApp groups, advice,
awesome.
Sports psychs, all that. Really focus on that, making sure everyone's really happy. If you're happy, you play well. If you're happy and you've got a good lifestyle, we're looking after your mental health, physically, financially, making sure you're getting the right advice, right direction, putting the money where you should be instead of getting thrown in a different rot here. I've seen it all over my career.
I've
seen my mates finish their career with not a cent. I've seen, you know, many just rip players off. I've seen many just sign players up and then you don't see them until another 3 or 4 years when they've got to renegotiate a contract again. And this isn't by any mean, like, I'm not labelling all managers and agents because some of them are really good, but a lot of them are not good. And I think for me, being an ex-player who's now in the media, who can have an impact on these guys individually and professionally, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer for me, and I'm really passionate about it. I've only just dipped my toes in, but I'm really looking forward to the next few years and signing up a number of players, you know.
This podcast is for men and women, but we are really trying to target, you know, young men.
Yeah.
We're being involved with Movember. Do you have any advice, or what type of values are you really trying to install into these young men that, you know, our listeners, whether they're playing sport or not, yeah, might be able to benefit from?
Well, I think a big thing, you know, when we talk about, you know, that treating the way you treat people, like, I know it's quite simple, but I'm really big on that. You know, just having values, you know, saying please and thank yous and having respect. Respect's a big thing. I think that we've kind of lost a little bit of that over the last generation. I don't know if I'm out of line by saying that, but I got brought up with very, very strong core values and respecting your elders and treating people how you want to be treated, and
being a good person,
like it's not that hard, yeah, you know. And I think if you're a good person, you'll go a long way, you know. Work ethic and skill and all that you know, obviously teaching work ethic and making sure you train your ass off and you know, that's big, but skill is natural and you can work on that, but I think being a good person is the main thing.
But it's awesome that someone in the position you are, it's good, it's so refreshing and to hear that, though, as someone, you know, with your influence now with these young up and coming athletes, yeah, whether at golf, rugby, but you know, they're going to have hopefully these core values that, yeah, you know, you're like almost that father figure in the way.
That's what it's about, yeah,
which is amazing.
Mm.
And what about for any young men, you know, who may be struggling, whether, yeah, it's with sport, with their careers, maybe feeling that they're not good enough, or, yeah, you know, at that time when you were thinking about quitting rugby, if you could maybe go back and give yourself advice or other young people advice, what would it be?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like I said before, you know, you've always got to work hard. Nothing's going to be handed to you on a platter. That's just through generation to generation to generation. You're not going to be handed anything. Nothing's going to come easily. You got to accept that. I think that's one thing that a lot of people, you know, kind of think that something may be handed to them on a silver platter. That's been pretty brutal. You got to be honest. Like, there's no way of tippy-toeing around it. Honesty is a big thing. You got to look yourself in the mirror and say, well, am I making the right decisions? Am I doing the right things? You know, that's the first and foremost. I think you get that right. But then just, I would say, ignore the outside noise. Surround yourself with a great team. I think you got to have the right team of people around you. If you're a professional athlete, very important. You know, you don't want yes men. You want people to tell you the truth and look you in the eyes and say, listen, mate, you're not working hard enough, or you're not doing this right, or you're doing this amazing. Keep doing what you're doing, mate. I'm proud of you. You know, I think that's a big thing. You want to know exactly where you stand. And then you can better yourself, or you can pull back, or whatever it may be. But I think it's putting the right people around you is really important. I think that's in everything, not just sport. That's in business. That's in,
yeah,
you know, just at home. You know, you want to have the right people around you who you can trust,
yep,
and are going to tell you straight down the line what's going on.
And an interesting one with that too, Raith, is expectation management. I think is that. I'm all for having dreams and goals and wanting to be the best, you know, you know, having that vision board and stuff. That's fantastic. But to also have that expectation that something like making the top level of NRL,
yeah,
is a ruthless industry. Yeah. And for other professions out there, you know, to be the top of what you do, it's very competitive, and not everyone's going to get there.
Yeah.
So to realise that if you don't get there,
spot
it
on,
doesn't mean you're not talented. It doesn't mean you're not a good person. But
you're not a failure.
You're not a failure, because it's fucking difficult to get there.
Failure's a part of life. That was another, just come to mind. I think you got to be hands-on too. So a lot of young athletes, they do put a lot of their responsibilities into their parents or their agent. I think, you know, you've got to actually experience failure, like you just said. So you may buy a poor investment, or you may, you know, whatever it may be. But if you're involved in that process, You'll learn why it was a poor investment. You'll learn why you made that poor decision, and you won't do it again. But if you've got other people doing it for you, you'll just continue to just put your trust into them, and you won't learn. You won't have that life experience. So then you'll get to 30, and you'll go, oh, you know, I haven't made the money I should have made, or I haven't done the right thing here.
So
what happened? What do I do now? Well, I don't even know how to do it
because
I didn't go through the process. So that's one, you're talking about going back and telling yourself or other people, you got to be involved in the process yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think to me that sounds like taking accountability.
Yeah.
And also, I love the quote, a mistake's not a mistake if you don't learn from it.
Yeah.
And yeah, we all muck up. And I think we need to not be too hard on ourselves when we muck up. We're only human. Mm-hmm. And...
No, you're right.
I love it.
Yeah, it's perfect.
No, I love it. And look, you know, we will start to sort of wrap things up soon, Brace, but we've spoken a lot about the, I guess, the not so good parts of what, you know, an NRL career. And it isn't all just, you know, smiles and glamour that people might see on the outside. There are difficult times, and understandably so. And you're doing amazing things now with your mentoring the young kids and all that. But I suppose if you could pick one, looking back at your amazing career, you know, a highlight or something where you kind of almost, if you relive that, you kind of get your goosebumps and, you know, whether it's running onto the field for the first time or getting your first try or a hat trick. I know you got a hat trick thrown in there somewhere. Yeah. But what's that? Do you have something that stands out above all else?
I've got a couple of moments. Definitely, I mean, winning a grand final is just huge in any kind of league, because it's not easy to do, you know, and that's that team environment too, and you work your ass off with those guys for a long time to reach the ultimate goal. So Bulldogs 2004 was just incredible. You know, very emotional too. You know, obviously not having Dad there was very emotional, and seeing the family and that sort of stuff. But that was probably the best moment of my life up until then. Origin was a big one. I got to play alongside Andrew Johns, which is, he's one of the greats of our game.
Yeah.
And I played in the halves with him, so we were kind of, for you guys that don't know league that well.
No, I know the Blues, though.
Origin, State of Origin's massive. It's the biggest game that we have. And I got to play with one of the legends, and we won against Queensland up there and smashed them in the decider and full capacity crowd and all that. That was amazing. That was just
amazing.
That was goosebumps moments. And there's a good moment that gets played a lot where I kicked a field goal against, was in a final against the Tigers. I was at the Roosters here just around the corner at the SFS against the Tigers, and it was 15-14, I think it was, they were beating us. I don't even think the score's right. I'm hopeless with that sort of stuff.
That's right.
Too many knocks to the head.
Yeah, there you go. we're one behind, and in the last 10 seconds or 5 seconds of the game, I kicked the goal to level it up, and then we went on to win that game.
That's so good.
They replay it a lot, because it was one of the best games in history.
Might have to go watch the highlights
after this. Actually, I got it here now. No, I'm just joking.
well, for those listening, they can go search it and go look at the highlights and relive it with your Braith. Yeah. But no, it's amazing to hear those highs, because, you know, understanding it, so you had so many of those, which is amazing.
Something that I read, though, yesterday when I was learning more about you, that you said having your daughter was up there with all of those moments.
Yes, of course. Yeah, they're different moments. Like sport, when you have kids, your life changes. They're the best things that's ever happened to you. You know, I've got two beautiful daughters and a stepson, and that nothing can replace that feeling of having children. That's different. You can't compare it. You know,
and that's something that even from sitting with you for an hour now, I feel like you really value that, being happy in yourself and, you know, your family, your mum, your children.
Yeah.
That's just more important to you, it seems like, than your sporting career.
It definitely is. It's my life. Like and that's, again, what you learn as you get older, like me, and you've experienced nearly everything, is that...
You're not that old, bro.
I feel very old. Especially sitting next to you two as well now. You realise that, you know, I kind of eliminate any negativity now out of my life, and anyone who's even close, who I think's going to be a negative, they're just not involved. It's just your family and your friends and people that you trust and value, and that's it.
Your team.
Yeah. And that's you learn that through experience, you know. It's not going to... That's just part of life.
No, I love it. And now, look, and thanks so much, Braith, for this chat. You've really, you know, you've given us today. I think it's you know, obviously your sporting career talks for itself, and you know, no doubt we could talk hours and hours just about your sporting career alone. But we thought, you know, going behind the uniform and, you know, talking about some of your more vulnerable times throughout the life, and obviously starting around, you know, when your dad passed away and ended his own life, and what you've learned as a result of that, it's truly inspiring to hear what you're doing now with these young up-and-coming athletes, you know, to think they've got someone like you as a figure and a father figure in their life. I think it's awesome to think that there's that good in the game. And look, before we do finish off, we've just got a little, I mean, this is the first episode, so this is the first episode.
I wanted to be the first episode.
And I think you're a fitting guest, Braith, absolutely fitting. But look, we do want to kind of finish each week off with a bit of a challenge, and it definitely falls in line with what we've been talking about. And, you know, something that you kept referring to was talking about something or talking to a mate, and it's something you helped with. So we're calling it a bit of a challenge for our listeners, but also we can challenge you, is that reaching out to a mate or someone you haven't heard from in a while, and it's as simple as giving them a message. And all jokes aside, you know, it's something that my Venmo's all about. It's just someone, we've all got someone in our lives, whether it's a close schoolmate, someone you used to play footy with, someone you used to work with, but just taking the initiative just to reach out to them to say, hey, mate, you know, haven't heard from you, I hope you're well, mate.
Fantastic
idea. So that's something we're gonna personally do every week, reach out to a new friend. So if you're keen to get involved in that challenge, Braith.
No, I think that's a great idea because you do lose touch with people and you lose touch with how they're feeling. And I think I only did it last week with a good mate of mine, actually.
There you go.
We reached out to each other, and it was good because he hasn't been doing so well.
Actually really good. And you don't know the difference that one little message or phone call would make. But then finally, we also want our guests to give us a little bit of something to, it doesn't have to be a complicated challenge, but just something for us that, you find helps you with when you're having a down day, or it can be something as simple as cooking up a nice meal, or it's something as like meditation, whatever. But something from you that we could then
of a spiritual person. I think positive reinforcement is important.
Yeah,
I think sometimes you got to sit back and think of all the good things that you've got in your life. That's all I'd probably give advice. I mean, I'm big on having a release. My release is golf.
Mm-hmm. Easy. I can just go running.
Yeah, you can go running. I think it's important that I would say my advice is have something that you can just go that you love and you're passionate about that just takes you away from everything in the world.
Yeah.
Just for an hour a week, 30 minutes, whatever it may be.
I love it.
I think that's my big advice, and always think of the positive things in life and get rid of the negative. That's pretty basic.
Honestly, it's awesome. I think we'll both take away, and Izzy's probably going to be the running, but also for the listeners, if you're having when you listen to this and you're having a bit of a downtime over the next week or so, Braith just said, just find something, even if it's just for an hour, whether it's taking the dogs for a walk or going for a run, just that sort of that release.
Just get up and do it, Sometimes it's hard to find that motivation, but everyone needs time to themselves to just get out and get some fresh air and think about all the wonderful things in life.
Mm. No, well, Braith, mate, thanks again. It's truly an honour to meet you, but also to hear about your story. And looking forward to following your journey and then also some of these young athletes that hopefully are going to become the next Braith and Astors.
I hope so. No, it's been great to come on because I think it's good to get insight behind the uniform, like you said, to a lot of professional athletes who there's a lot of perception and judgment, but they're real and they have real lives and they are affected by the same things that you are. So it's been great to come on. I love what you guys are doing and I'm honoured to be on the first show, so thank you.
Thanks so much, Braith.
No worries. Braith. See you, mate.
Cheers.